It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. In a life enriched with music, Doug Bradley of Madison treasures unforgettable moments from his college days in the late 1960s, like when he played basketball with Smokey Robinson and the Miracles and held the hand of legendary singer Dionne Warwick after she finished a set and learned Martin Luther King Jr. had been assassinated.
Doug Bradley is an author, educator, and Vietnam veteran. His new book weaves together his personal journey and a life filled with music. It's called The Tracks of My Years, a music-based memoir. Doug, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you, Kate. It's great to be here.
You allow music to guide your memories like a playlist of important moments in your life. How is music so central to your life?
You just said it. It is. I think it's... You know, they're doing studies now. If mothers sing to their babies when they're in the womb, they react, they respond. So I think music is one of those most essential senses and elements in our life. And, you know, we all have our own playlist. Kate, you've got yours. Maybe when you were in Louisiana, maybe when you were at Temple, maybe when your kids were born, maybe when you got to Madison, maybe when you had your heart broken. And so I think we all have these songs that trigger those memories. And for me, I think with some of the maybe the moments in my life where I had some upheaval, high school, which I talk about in the book, and then Vietnam, of course, which was an upheaval for the nation, music was what centered me and allowed me, I think, to get through difficult times and in a way, especially with Vietnam, to heal.
The title of your memoir is one word removed from the song The Tracks of My Tears, originally recorded by Smokey Robinson and the Miracles in 1965, covered many times. You were headed off to college in the fall of 65. Why play on the words and what speaks to you about this song?
Well, it's really incredible. I mean, one of those just lucky experiences. I went to first generation, neither of my folks went to college. In fact, my dad didn't even graduate from high school. He got a GED in the Army during World War II. But that generation thought that an education was a way for you to get a, you know, you needed to do that. I mean, it was important. Advance yourself, grow, learn. But we didn't have any money. You know, we were working class, row houses in Philly, and then, you know, trying to move upward in Pittsburgh. My dad, by that time, was in sales. So this lovely little school in West Virginia, Bethany College, it's in Northern Panhandle between Pittsburgh and Wheeling, gave me a scholarship and a loan. And lo and behold, I get there and I start to get immersed in music. I was on the social committee. They finally held an elective office for that. And I ran with a guy and our what we said our platform was, if we were elected, we were going to bring Smokey and the Miracles to camp. We got them.
People say,
you know, I knew Smokey's music. I grew up with my brother singing in doo-wop groups, so I knew that whole sound. So now I'm a big Smokey fan. Then to have them at our college in March of 67, they did a marvelous set. They were just wonderful people. And as we were leaving, because the biggest venue we had at that small college was the gymnasium, we're leaving, the guys look at the hoops that we had, you know, that were up in the ceiling because we had the kids on the floor. They said, man, I'd like to shoot some hoops. So I'm playing basketball with Smokey and the Miracles.
Wow.
You know, on a Sunday night in West Virginia. You can't script that.
I was reflecting on the refrain, so take a good look at my face. You know, my smiles look out of place. Have you had to, at times, wear a brave face or hide sadness in your years?
Oh, huge. I mean, don't we all? I think for me, it was some challenging situations when I was in high school. I'm sure high school is still the same. But 60 years ago, in fact, when I graduated, I got at odds with the group I was hanging with, who were the most influential people in the high school. Long story short, I ended up being on the outs, and sort of that sort of put me on the outs with everybody. And that was tough because, you know, this is the mid-60s, and, you know, in America where you're growing up, and those teenage years were so vital, and that's when we sort of became the generation that we did. Music, of course, counterpointing all of that. And there I was lonesome, I was lonely, I sort of friendless. I had a teacher that reached out to me and helped me to sort of get through that time, but it was music and writing. That's when I learned, that's when I started to write, was there's a way to get through this pain and maybe at least to understand if you get down on paper. It's therapeutic. And that and music were, I think, what got me by. So I had to have a good look on my face. I'm still playing at the best record collection in the school, so I'm still playing at sock hops and dances. So I got to look like I'm having a good time. I wasn't having a good time. And then, Kate, of course, Vietnam, where it was hard, I think, not to have some pain.
Mm. Let's fast forward to your service in Vietnam and the song, We Gotta Get Out of This Place by the Animals. There's this moment in the book when you're leaving Vietnam and you received your official notice that you're going home. First of all, can you take a moment and read that passage to us?
Sure. I'd be glad to. They had a thing called the, what they called the planes that were leaving, where they called them freedom birds. And Kate, I think it's to set this up, not just about the song, which we can talk more about, which it wasn't a Vietnam song, but became the Vietnam Vets National Anthem. We got to get out of this place. But you had no transition. I mean, I was lucky because I was in the rear. So I was working in the air-conditioned jungle because the generals and colonels I worked for wanted air conditioning. Most of the folks were out in the field in this oppressive heat in this crazy guerrilla war, but we don't know from one day to the next what's going on. And so one day you could be in the jungle. You know, the next day you're at the 90th Replacement Battalion, either in Long Bend or at Cameron Bay. The next day you're on a Freedom Bird. The next day, which becomes the same day because you cross the international dateline, you're in San Francisco or Fort Lewis, Washington. The next day you're out. I mean, that is no transition. So this was, so the Freedom Bird meant a lot, and it was important to us, but realize we're just jumping from one thing into another. And DEROS, love military acronyms, stood for Date Eligible for Return from Overseas, DEROS. I nestled in my Freedom Bird, headed for San Francisco and the rest of my life. Nobody around to hassle me like the guys on the flight over to Vietnam. Nobody to give me an order, tell me to get a haircut or trim my mustache, or suddenly the plane was lifting off the shimmering Tonsina tarmac. And we departing GIs burst into a chorus of, we got to get out of this place.
We got to get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we got to get out of this place. Girl, there's a better life for me and you.
Everyone smiled as if the weight of the world had been lifted from their shoulders. Little did we know, we'd be carrying the weight of that war the rest of our lives.
Mm, thank you for that passage. What was it like for soldiers to carry the weight of the war around for generations?
I think in some ways unbearable. We talk about the 58,318 names on the wall, and that's ultimate sacrifice. But we lost many of those veterans since then because they never were welcomed home. They never had the transition. They never had the support they needed. It's not the parades. It's just the acceptance, the understanding, the willingness to try and learn. We didn't even have thank you for your service then, which you could argue is sort of a hollow epithet, but we didn't even have that. So I think it's one thing to fight a war. All soldiers have to deal with that struggle and what war is about, which is about killing the other person, the enemy. But then to carry the moral burden of that the rest of your life, we shouldn't do that. We should not do that to people who we ask to go and do that kind of thing in the name of our country.
We're talking with Doug Bradley, a Madison-based educator and Vietnam veteran. His latest book is called Tracks of My Years, a music-based memoir. There is a song in high school, I Can't Help Myself, by the Four Tops, highlighting the time of life when you're leaving high school, you're entering college, and you talk about playing it like a dozen times in the school cafeteria, and it's not until the school administrator pulls the plug on this record player that he's able to stop you. What was going on with that song?
It is an absolutely terrific song. I think they somehow said you can play records during the senior lunch. This was like senior day. And so this is, 1965, May, and we're having our senior day. And we didn't have a food fight. We didn't have a protest, we danced. And that song had just come out. My brother had it, and I had that turntable and played it. And everybody just got up and danced. Play it again. Everybody got, and we could not stop dancing. I think it was that whole notion of our lives are going to change in a month. We're all graduating from high school. Some of us are going end up in Vietnam. Some of us are going to college. Some of us are going to go to trade school. Some of us are going to work at the local grocery store. Our lives were going to be different. And that moment of, we've got, this is who we are. Let's join hands. Let's get up on our feet. Let's dance, because we don't know what's coming next. But this is us, and this is who we are, and we're going to have some fun.
There was another very young lady in your life who, by the name of Summer, your toddler at the time, in 82, Summer, doesn't want to go to daycare, doesn't want to take her naps. But you, under the down low, expose Summer to your record collection. Can you talk about the You've Got Your Trouble song and how that happened?
It's still just an amazing story. And I never expected that to be the prompt for the book and to be what I call the overture to the book, because the book chapters, tracks have musical titles, the sections. But, she's a wonderful person now. She's the head of the Public Service Commission. I mean, she's quite an accomplished young woman. But she was very feisty and independent and was somebody that would give you a little, you had to work on it. And so here I am thinking that maybe it's because I was a stay-at-home dad then. My wife was more employable as an attorney. And I'm trying to figure out my way. Am I going to be a writer? Am I going to be a veterans counselor? Am I going to do something else? Am I going to teach? And I'm staying home, and I'm thinking, maybe this isn't so good for her that I'm so much in her life and, with the teachers, with the school, with the... And so long story short, music was our refuge when we came home. And some of that time was my wife grew up, she's very musical, and she would play songs. She had these old, 78s. That would have song, like Antoinette the clarinet and Bobo the oboe. I mean, enough of that. So I would sneak on, a little R&B, a little rock and roll, and we'd sort of have fun. I think she knew we were doing something that her mother wouldn't approve of, which was part of what she enjoyed, I think. And so one day, particularly bad day, I was kind of feeling down and sorry for myself. Summer had gotten some complaints at school. We're trying to figure this out. Is this me? What's happening? And she could tell that there was something wrong with me. 2 years old. And she said, play Troubles, Daddy. Hmm. And I'm thinking I got troubles. I'm feeling it right now. How did you know? But what are you talking about? And she went over in the stack of records, just went right to where it was in the stack, pulled it out, brought it over, and told me to play it.
She's found somebody else to take your place. You've got your troubles, I've got mine. I too have lost my love today. All of my dreams have flown away.
That line, I see that worried look upon your face. You got your troubles, I got mine. I'm sitting there with her, and I'm listening to this, and it's like she's consoling me. I'm the adult, right? And here's my daughter saying, Daddy, it's going to be okay. Everybody's got their troubles. We're going to get through this. Mm. And we did.
Are you still writing and still reflecting on music?
I always will, and I always do. It's interesting. I keep thinking I'll maybe do a different shtick, and the book I have coming out next year about my mom is different because it's not music-based. It's writing base. She and I spent 49 days with her at her bedside when she was dying. It took a long time because she stopped eating. It took 49 days. She was 99. But, music wasn't central there. Writing is. But those two are intertwined for me. I'm now writing something again about Vietnam. And a lot of the sections of the book or the chapters or the references are music related because it's always going to be who I am. And I think it's in the ether. I mean, like I said before, you got a soundtrack. The folks in the studio here have a soundtrack. The folks listening do. And I think music is one of those things that connects us, centers us, presents us, identifies us, and heals us.
Doug, thank you so much for the conversation, for your reflections.
Kate, I appreciate it. Want to come back and talk some more sometime. More books to write, more songs to hear.
That is Doug Bradley, a Madison-based author, educator, and Vietnam veteran. His latest book, it is called Tracks of My Years, a music-based memoir.